Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mainly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark and I'm welcoming back from an episode, it's nearly 100 episodes ago, from episode 196, Bullet. It's Andrew Stringer. Andrew, welcome back to the book club.
Hiya, thanks for letting me back in.
No trouble at all. So last time, you introduced me to the wonders of a comic which I confess I knew nothing about, and we did some wonderful 1970s action sort of, but not action.
It was, the younger brother of Warlord and the sort of... would be exactly the same time as action.
Yeah.
Lost in action's much bigger sort of halo.
And if I remember rightly, it's pretty much straight after that episode, you had an idea of what you wanted to come back with. And it's taken us a year or so to actually get to it. Tell us, what is the book we're doing today?
Well, the initial one that I did actually come back to you, but I'd already been sort of zapped, was the Light and Darkness War, because I love Cam Kennedy's work. But that one had gone shortly after Bullet. So the other one that stands out for me was Ministry of Space.
Excellent stuff. So Ministry of Space, a three-part miniseries from Image Comics that ran from 2001 to 2004, which seems like odd dates for a three-part series. We might come to that. Written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Chris Weston, coloured by Laura Martin, lettered by Michael Heisler, and collected by Image Comics in 2006, which is the collection we're looking at the moment. I'm guessing you're in hard copy and I'm in digital.
Yeah, I've got my dog-eared copy here.
Great stuff. So first of all, why, Ministry of Space? What was it that made you choose this one for the book club?
I am very, very shallow. So it was an amazing front cover. And the amazing front cover that I'm looking at has got a Spitfire on it in sort of RAF, sort of World War II colours. It's got a Hawker Hunter just taking off in the distance. And there's an enormous booster rocket and then RAF liveried spaceship, and it's more of an aircraft as opposed to a sort of a traditional sort of a spaceship. So and a fabulous colours, and yeah, Spitfire Hunter and a spaceship in RAF colours. What more could you want?
Perfect. Fantastic stuff. So, well, let's get to it and give us the basic setup. What is Ministry of Space about?
Well, it's definitely an alternate history, so I love my alternate histories. So at the moment, I'm really enjoying The Apple, All Mankind, and and things like that. So The Man in the High Castle, sorry. And then just thinking of it, love alternate sort of histories. And it really is just takes on from World War II, and then it takes the RAF, basically, or what gets resurfaced as the Ministry of Space, takes Imperial Britain, the Empire, out to Mars. And in the life of those three episodes, you go to sort of just out to space station, into Churchill Space Station, into onto the moon, and then finally onto Mars.
The British space program that never was, but becomes this alternate history. And we find out why in the book, I guess fairly early on in the first issue, but then also there's a big reveal, which we won't necessarily spoil just yet, towards the end of the third issue, isn't there?
Yeah, there's definitely two reveals in it that sort of will probably catch you off guard. I was chatting to one person, guessed what one of the stories probably was. But there's definitely two twists in the tale that you need to read to get to the bottom of.
So talking of reading experiences, it was the three-issue miniseries. It had a delayed publication schedule. Did you read the issues as they came out?
No, I've just learned from you then, obviously, the very long... I had my two children then, so I wasn't doing much other than reading, I guess, Bob the Builder.
Right.
So hence I just got this in 2006. So no, I missed the fact that it was delayed. I have spoken to Chris. He didn't mention that, but he did mention some of the fun of doing it. But I wasn't really aware of it. The other thing that really appealed to me once you sort of got through the pages, it really follows on. I've got a couple of books at home, a book about T-Force, which was the British army group who went into Germany to capture all the goodies and to capture all the brain boxes. So again, this is an alternative history of what T-Force managed to capture, whereas the Americans got hold of Von Braun, T-Force get hold of T-Force obviously got hold of Von Braun for England.
Because is he named as Von Braun in this book? I mean, he's obviously.
I did. Yeah, you're right. I did scan over it, and I couldn't actually find Walter, or does it Walter Von Braun named. So they sort of just skirt around the edges, but nobody else, Russia, America, nobody else manages to power into space the way that Britain does.
Yeah, because early on in this alternate history, we see the Americans arriving at what they think is Germany's sort of rocket base to sort of round up all the secrets and the scientists, only to find that they've been beaten to the punch this time by the British.
Everything is cleared out. There's not a sausage left, nothing at all. And, yeah.
And what is the sort of the delight and fascination in these alternate histories that look at the way things perhaps could have gone?
I guess for me, it's just we all know what did happen, and then just all those sort of, I just the amazing sort of thought process that certain people put into just the slightest twist or sliding door moment, and then what happens after that. I've not got the imagination for it myself, so I enjoy everybody else's work there.
So we've got. You know, as we say, he's obviously Von Braun working for the British after the war, and the space program becomes a British thing rather than an American thing. It's all done with a certain sort of RAF
gusto.
Yes, gusto, led by, and I've forgotten the character's name now. Is it?
Jacko Dashwood.
Dashwood, that's him.
Who has various, through, obviously, it's got a timeline in it, who has various. Promotions, so he pretty much ends up as the sort of the Uber of the sort of Ministry of Space, and then becomes Professor Dashwood at the very end.
And he runs. So we run through his life story through these three issues because it brings us pretty much up to the 2000s and the ongoing space program when he's become this very senior figure who they take up into space. For a sort of big reveal at the end, a rather elderly Dashwood, as opposed to the dashing RAF hero that becomes a test pilot after the war.
Yeah, he's called to face his, his day in court, because it is a little bit of a court that he's summoned to. All the young and the bright of the new era of the Ministry of Space. Again, it's a very empire-led courtroom. There's sort of Sikhs, Hindus, and Brits, Australians. So we're all one big happy family in this alternate reality. But still, everything comes back to Mother England. In terms of London has never given up or ceded control of anything to in terms of the empire, I think.
And yes, it's interesting that because one of the sort of I suppose minor elements to this story is that it also deals with racism and xenophobia after the war. There's a suggestion, I think, that Werner, Von Braun, it's either him or one of the rocket scientists has married an English woman, but finds themselves literally stoned at their wedding.
Yeah, ostracized. It's not the happy families that. I guess it'll people I don't think of. I mean, not many of us were around to experience that period. It's very much sort of a, you come working for us, you're going to work for us. I don't care. We just want the outcome. We just want the results rather than anything else. And they're kept in prison camps, almost a sort of a Soviet type approach. Again, not that I know much of the Soviet approach to the space industry. But it seemed to be a lot more closed than anything we were doing over here in America.
And I think, if I remember rightly, from Warren Ellis's afterward, there's a Mark Miller foreword. I think Warren Ellis wrote a piece afterwards for this collection, which suggests, I think he's, if I remember rightly, he said that actually happened to a family member of his who married a German after the war.
Yeah, he talks about it sort of the approach was more akin to if he'd served the Russians. Yeah, for the planets. chief designer Korolev was ruled by politics. Yeah, definitely it wasn't a nice place to work, or that's the inference that everybody's talking about, or the gist of the story.
And just to also say, even when things seem to be all wonderful afterwards, because, I mean, basically in the Ministry of Space, in this book, things aren't quite all wonderful. There's even, you know, even when we get up to date, there is a suggestion that there is some sort of segregation going on in space, even though we have all these different races and religions represented on the sort of council, which seems rather strange. And I, you know, Warren Ellis, I think, hinting that things aren't quite as ever as good as they seem.
Yeah, it's interesting. Certainly, race. I'm naive. I was just looking at the story sometimes. You go through it, but when you read it a second or a third time, every other page has got sort of a racial. There's a statement in it, or it's not a statement. It's a picture. It's a frame, and you sort of put all those together, and you say, "Oh, okay." That's part of the reveal at the end. So there's consistent theme through most of sort of every couple of pages. There's a little, was it, I suppose, it'd be called an Easter egg these days in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah,
there's an egg sitting there for somebody to pick up.
Now, also in Warren Ellis's notes at the back of this book, he mentions Dan Dare, and particularly the Dan Dare collection, The Man from Nowhere, which actually we covered on the book club in episode 100 with Simon Belmont.
Oh, wow.
Now, obviously, Dan Dare is sort of a big influence on this book, both in the writing and when we get to talk about the artwork. I suppose we can't ignore the 1950s and the British space hero Dan Dare has been a big influence on this, can we?
I know, definitely. Some of the artwork just hails back to sort of a 1950s Dan Dare, and some of the ships are very, very retro. And like I said, there's nothing in space. Even with Elon Musk's attempt, there's nothing in space. These are all unique to this timeline. But at the same time, I love it. You've got certain pictures where you've got like a Canberra, which obviously an RAF, one of the first jet bombers, in the background doing something. And then you've got this brand new space jet in the foreground that is like mothershipping and things like that. So yeah, all the way through it is sort of harks back to the technology that we had in that time period, overlaid with the new tech that's been developed for the Ministry of Space.
I'll mention that Warren Ellis is a creator with some problems surrounding him in recent years. We're not going to go into them on this episode, but I do plan to sort of get to that whole issue of how we deal with difficult creators in a future episode. So we're not ignoring it totally, but we are going to put that to one side for this discussion. He writes this sort of wonderful, sort of loving look at Britain after the war, and the idea that we had this, that we could have had the Ministry of Space, we could have been the leaders in the space program. It's all sort of, you know, fantastic and wonderful stuff. As I say, there's a real sort of dark edge to it as well, and particularly when it gets to the big reveal at the end, which is how Britain managed to fund a space program, because as we know, after the war, Britain was not terribly well off financially.
No. And Churchill's involved, and Dashwood has a plan, and together they think it's a good idea.
It's interesting, actually, Churchill's involved, because there's another, you know, real historical figure who was extraordinarily complicated and perhaps somewhat darker than his public image has, you know, has survived. The myth of Churchill is much better than perhaps the reality of the man.
I think so. He was I guess you've got to thank him. He was otherwise it would have all turned out differently. But certainly was a man of his time with some very imperial thought processes and mindsets it's hard to see him as quite the hero that he was at the time. But, yeah, without doubt, he obviously, I don't think Europe would be the same without him, would it?
No. And if we talk about another heroic man with a difficult persona, perhaps, I should say that the hero of this one, Dashwood, I don't know, well, actually, maybe he isn't the hero of this one. But anyway, the protagonist of this book, Dashwood, loses both legs in an accident and gets a pair of tin legs like famous.
Got a bit of Douglas Bader in him.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Douglas Bader, who was an extraordinary heroic character, raised millions of money for charity and was apparently an extraordinary, let's say, difficult person to get on with.
He was such a force of nature. And, he was flying from my hometown in Hornchurch and things like that. So, with his big wings. So, all sorts of things, so much passion and drive, and exactly the same Dashwood. Has the same drive to get an even bigger wing. So, we haven't touched upon it, also do love the way that he manages to build all the continents into it. We've got action in Woomera. Is it Woomera in Australia?
Yeah.
Where we did a lot of nuclear tests and all over the place. He managed to incorporate a few of the Commonwealth, let's call them the Commonwealth, the Imperial countries that we had as empire.
Yeah, he does. It does get around a bit because the British Empire continues and dominates space as well as everything else. Interesting. Now, of course, I'm very puzzled as I don't think we can answer why the publication was so delayed over 3 years for three issues, but also that it stops after three issues, because it feels to me like there was plenty of, you know, room for this story to grow and continue. And again, we don't know why it stopped, do we?
No. I spoke to Chris, said hello at Lawless, and then we chatted a little bit afterwards. So thanks, Chris, for finding some time to answer some questions. It definitely just it stopped. However, he's up for a return. So if anybody could help there, I think he'd love to get involved with it. I think he's got an idea. Rather than a sequel, I think he calls it a sidequel. So what else? You don't necessarily need the presence of Dashwood anymore, but there's plenty of side stories that I think he's got a mane on.
So let's run with that then and turn to Chris Weston's artwork, which obviously we're both, I'm going to say, huge fans of.
Definitely.
I will mention that from Warren Ennis's afterward, I know he was very keen to get Chris Weston, particularly because through Chris Weston you link to Don Lawrence and that links to Frank Hampson. So you've got that, again, that link back to Dan Dare, which he was very keen on. Tell us a little bit about Chris's work on the Ministry of Space, and perhaps, I guess, some of those wonderful spacecraft.
Yeah, no, I always love spacecraft, so I'm lucky enough to own one page of Chris's art that I bought a good few years ago. And guess what? It's a massive spacecraft breaking out of atmosphere. But, yeah, no, he's got so many angles. He's doing old stuff. He's doing old fighter aircraft. Every other page, you've got a Hurricane in it. You've got Spitfires. You've got and any number of sort of historically accurate into the 50s and 60s. And then, like I said, a raft of different spaceships designs, being those that are just going into space and turning back, those that are going to a sort of Churchill station, no, Shackleton base on the station on Mars, and those on the moon as well. So we get a different design spaceship in every single scenario. Every single spaceship that you could ask for. And the volume of spaceships we were building is also quite phenomenal. I don't know where they found all the metal.
Yes.
And all the fuel. But, the landing on Mars is quite a spectacular couple of pages of sort of dozens of rocket ships landing in order and then planting the Union Jack on the Martian soil.
It is his wonderful detailed art. We could almost say there's a touch of the Ian Kennedys as well because of his, you know, great work on Spitfires and Hurricanes and so on. and then the spacecraft that go in, you know, into space for the ministry are just wonderful. The other thing that, of course, I thought of, as well as Dandare, was Thunderbirds.
Yeah. They've got the mixture of craft. I'm just looking at another page now, and there's Britannia is flying over, which is a sort of a mixture of a de Havilland Venom type twin boomed or twin towed spaceship. Ironically, same name as the America's Cup yacht that's just come second in the America's Cup, but that's my other passion, sailing. But yeah, so you've got Britannia and a various different crafts. That go up, and some of which come down in one piece and some of which don't come down in one piece.
It's interesting that Dashwood, the character in this, says repeatedly to Von Braun that they want reusable spacecraft. They don't want single shots. They want what we would now call something more like the shuttle, or as you said, SpaceX. And so we get these wonderful, almost based on, you know, World War II British aircraft, which have become sort of transformed into space shuttles or spacecraft that can dock, that can come back into atmosphere. They can do it all, can't they?
Yeah. Definitely. It really is the stuff that Elon Musk read it and took away.
Yeah. Oh, I hope he did. It's probably better than the stuff he seems to be reading currently.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's true. Just one thing I just remembered, actually, when you touched on the way it was delivered in series, one of the points I've just seen the notes that Chris sent me, he enjoyed all of the work. The only thing that stressed him out was possibly there were big delays in when certain things arrived.
Right.
And in hindsight, it's just answered one of our own questions. We sort of see a Seek, I think it is, on the board. And that page was written before he knew the twist at the end.
Oh, okay.
So, had he known where the story was finally going to go with a complete twist at the end, I probably wouldn't have put a Seek in the Ministry of Space boardroom. But you could probably work out what he's saying. You can probably work out why that person was there in hindsight. But yeah, it probably just he says doesn't help the ending twist.
That's interesting that he was doing artwork without finished scripts in a way.
Yeah. No, it's a little bit bonkers. But I think from what I'm reading, what his notes are that he sent me, that he had real flexibility. So I think Chris's own favourite page. Is ironically, I think if I just read it out, there wasn't a full script on it. All Warren asked for was that Dashwood rocket ship was crash landed in a field. So he took that one stage forward and then cut off Dashwood's legs and has a couple of pages in hospital. So rather than a quick crash and let's get back to space, it was that we have a diversion for a couple of pages.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So we've got Dashwood lying in bed in 1951 after his accident.
He's half the man he used to be. Maybe two-thirds of the man he used to be.
And we've got, exactly. He's lost his legs in this accident. He's lying there. We've got that thing that artists do sometimes amazingly, which is draped fabric over a figure, which is incredibly hard to do. But Chris Weston, of course, manages it beautifully, and Dashwood looking as if his world's ended at this point on his face. Interesting that that's Chris's page, preferred page, rather than one of the huge space scenes that we would.
Yeah,
think
I mean, it's clearly, and when you look at it, it's you're right that the crumpled bedclothes and the drapes of the bedclothes must have taken hours to do. And then the fine chest hair on Dashwood as well, but we won't need to go there. But it's a fabulous picture without any doubt.
What else did Chris tell you about working on this one? Was there any other little gems from
him? I think he definitely loves the Laura's colouring. He says that brings everything to life, especially on my, obviously I majored on the front page and she put all the colours in it and then brings it to life with the with the clouds and make it look like a real scene. yeah, just obviously he just reminds it that it's a dark and twisted version of Dandrea, a strip that he'd always loved, especially sort of given his artists or his mentors in art world. I know he said, as I've listened on one or two of his podcasts that he's done with you, that how he thinks some of his early work was not his best and how it's improved over time. He said he thinks he'd probably have loosened up a little bit and get a bit dirtier, a bit more dirt and texture into the hardware. So, yeah, try and make it in a little bit more different perspective. Obviously, I think he reminds me that Frank Hampston, when he drew his things, he had models of the spaceships or whatever he was drawing, whereas Chris these days would be doing it on a 3D rendering now. So he'd be using some of those tools. But, yeah, he says he could make it a little bit more dirtier. And he's right. I mean, I love the art. But those spaceships, I'm just looking at Britannia again now as it enters space, it's pristine. It hasn't looks like it's just come out of the factory, when in reality it's just gone through into Earth and things like that. So yeah, we've got quite a few pristine. Even Britannia, as it crashes through a windmill, still looks quite pristine. Just losing a few ailerons and a little bit of a sort of cracked glass. But yeah, so that's what could happen next. Like I said, we've got to look forward to the sequel or the sidequel.
Okay, excellent. Well, I hope we do get it. Have you ever shown an artist or asked them to sign their early artwork and have an artist say to the, you know, say that they liked it? They all look at this stuff, which we think is wonderful, and go, oh, look at that bit, don't they?
Yeah, I saw, I think Dan Cornwall, I've got a number of his pages, and he was, somebody had said something a bit sort of, negative about one of his recent pages. I think there was a slight little perspective not right, and you and I would look at these pages and they're just a league of their own. They're so fabulous, the detail in that is all of the main artists. So yeah, it's a bit cheeky sometimes, you forget something. It's a bit like us making a spelling mistake or a bit of a grammar error. So I think they're all allowed not even an off day. It's just reality, isn't it? Everything's not perfect.
Yeah,
but all the way through this, the colours in it, and the people, and like I said, consistently, I love the way he references old, sort of the real craft of the time, the Lancaster, the Canberra, the Hurricane, Spitfire, and things like that. It's fabulous.
And we'll just shout out Laura Martin's colouring, because the particularly the sort of like the blasts of the rockets. The lighting on that is wonderful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, there's so much it's just explosive in those ones. It's fabulous. I'm just looking at one page here of 1953 with the rocket taking off, rockets in one bit, and then a sea and a river and just in the distance, and the river is almost as detailed as the rocket blasters. So yeah, her colouring is just really. Just takes it to another level, and it's full colour all the way through, obviously.
Yeah. And if you want to see rocket ships over London, if you want to see rocket ships depicted hanging in front of the moon or in front of the Churchill space station, then this is the book for you. Also, I noticed we get a slightly cheeky little Rover Cars logo on one of the spacecraft
There is that. I love that page. There's, every once in a while we get a Rover insignia. I mean, Hammerstein in Robusters certainly had one originally, although he came from America. But, yeah, there's a fabulous section with a lunar rover that drives off across the landscape in the distance.
And it is literally a lunar rover.
Oh, yeah, it's a rover takes up about a quarter of a panel.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I don't. I probably should know, but I'm not sure Rover's still going, is it? I know that
it's certainly not. No, I don't think it is. Is it? It's not. It's,
no.
It'll probably be back before long, but it'll come from a different continent, a bit like MGs.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Okay. Well, look. Before I ask you about some favourite moments from this story, what about your favourite Chris Weston work of all time? Would it be the Ministry of Space, or is there anything else that you particularly love from it?
I think it's got to be Ministry of Space, but I do, I've just going back now that I know that he's doing some, he's done some 2000 AD. I have managed to find some of his 2000 AD pages. But yeah, no, Ministry of Space is going to be my favourite, I think, for a while. Like I said, it's just a jolly boys outing. It's so gung ho, and then you obviously get to the twists at the end that they just think, oh wow, okay. So it was yeah.
Okay, well, before we get to Wonderful Grail pages from Chris Weston with Laura Martin's colouring, let's talk about the rest of this story. Any particular favourite moments or episodes in what is, I'm going to say it's a fairly short story in a way because it is just three issues, but what, any particular favourites for you?
Again, the pages of that I have managed to buy, and I haven't got loads, but most of them are spaceship or vehicle orientated. I just love the detail. So for me, pretty much wherever there's a at least one, two, three, four, or maybe five, or in some of these pages, half a dozen or a dozen spaceships going off, just always get my attention. So for me, it's the big space scenes. Especially the landing on Mars is pretty epic, with just dozens of spaceships and booster rockets landing on the red planet, and loads of ants or all the astronauts running out, and sort of you see them almost as ants in the distance. We go in style. We go en masse to Mars. There's no messing about with the Ministry of Space.
No, absolutely. Fantastic stuff. Well, let's play Grail Pages then. Before we do, you've got a Chris Weston page from this story. Tell us which page it is.
I think it's about halfway through, and I think it's Queen Elizabeth. All of the spaceships get very jingoistic names. So I think it's the Queen Elizabeth blasting off, which is one of the first major rockets that goes off to the moon. It's just pretty much a full page of a spaceship breaking out of the Earth's atmosphere.
And I think if I'm right, if you've got the digital version, it's page 50 in the digital version, and it is just wonderful. It's like a three panels, but the panels are at weird diagonal angles, and as you say, just a spaceship blasting off into space. Wonderful sort of detail on the ship, but also the coloured explosion sort of rocket trail, yeah. done coloured by Laura Martin. And you've got the coloured version, I guess.
No, mine is black and white.
Oh, you've got the black and whites, right? Oh,
next,
lovely.
Next to it, I've got the coloured page. But yeah, three images, all from a different perspective, all from a different angle. So brings the room to life.
Lovely. And that's framed and hanging on a wall somewhere. It's
framed and on the wall, yeah.
How long ago did you get that from Chris?
That one came from Dale, probably about 7 or 8 years ago.
Right. Nice.
I think it probably started off my I didn't realize things like this. I hadn't gone to many conventions. I hadn't gone to any conventions sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So I just didn't realise all this stuff was almost existing. So I saw that one and I thought, I love the book. So I bought myself, I think I had a bonus at Argos. So got the book, got the page.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's imagine that we could get all the rest of the pages and covers and that we could afford them, which I'm not sure we can.
No, I've learnt that one when.
Let's give you one or two more to hang on your wall then, virtually. What else would you pick from the Ministry of Space, Andrew?
Well, I'm going to leave the front cover on it because it's so fabulous. Everybody needs that one. I'm going to give one to a friend. So I've got a good friend, Steve, who read the story as well. And he loves, I think, page one of chapter one, which is just a spaceship landing in a very British, very English village. By the duck pond, and father and son are fishing, and he said that was a fabulous picture. He loved the fishing, so I'm going to give that to Steve, if I may.
Of course.
But for me, I do really love the Martian scenario when there's just multiple rocket heads open up, and they release sort of half a dozen booster rockets and I guess sort of reusable space shuttle. They are sort of a more of a shuttle design rather than a spaceship design. I love some of the Martian pages just as it starts to get busy on Mars. I'd love one of those.
And I think you mentioned that's a double page spread, I think, isn't it?
This one could certainly, the particular one I've got, which is towards the back, it's very orange and yellow, and it's just spaceships and more spaceships.
Lovely. Right, well, we will grant you those. We'll also do a virtual page for Steve. I'll post a picture of the page that you actually own as well when this episode comes out. Fabulous stuff.
You should probably post Chris's one as well, of course.
I will do, yeah.
The bed cover.
And let's hope that we do get the side call or the sequel from Chris at some point in the future, because I really felt that this story needed to go further. I mean, obviously, there is the big reveal which comes up, but I really felt that, the idea of a British space program and getting to Mars could be, seems to be so much more story there.
I could, again, I've got no imagination, but I can feel something. There's a story of the sort of the shenanigans that go on with the Americans and the Russians, maybe, of how they try and catch up when you look at the sort of espionage that goes on, all the way they try and get hold of bits of data and stuff like that. So, there's got to be something there. I reckon the Americans especially, but also the Soviets trying to get into space themselves and trying to play catch-up. Obviously, come 2002, the Americans are finally just on the verge of getting to the moon, I think. And that's when the Ministry of Space world sort of starts to crumble.
So I'll mention that there's the introduction by Mark Miller. There's an afterword by Warren Ellis. There is a certain number of character designs, sketches, some cover concepts that they were looking at using for the covers for the three issues. There's some 3D images that I think Chris Weston had sort of generated in order to help him with his space stations and so on. So instead of having Frank Hampson's actual physical models, he had some 3D models.
Yeah, again, time flies. It's very, very 2000s. It's a bit like watching another fabulous stories of mine, Babylon 5.
Oh, yeah.
And the graphics, the CGI rendering in Babylon 5 from, I guess, the 90s is very, very similar to what Chris is using, his sort of CGI renderings. They're very basic. They were fabulous at the time. They did all they needed to do at the time. So very early roughs and CGI renderings.
And while we're on that, I'll just mention that at the start of the extras section in my digital copy, there is an image of a sort of Dan Dare and Thunderbirds-inspired spacecraft flying over Tower Bridge. And I'm not quite sure where that image came from, but I think that would be my grail page, Andrew. I think I'll pick that one.
The Thames looks a little bit murky in there, but even in the background, there's another picture of London with little kids just on with jetpacks flying around London. And certainly in London, you've got a little sort of monorail type thing cutting across the Thames with monorail or sort of things like that flying over and stuff. So it's a fabulous page as well, that one.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Great. Well, the Ministry of Space, the trade paperback, still fairly easy to available to find on the second hand markets. I'll say that the digital is dead cheap, £6 on the Kindle I got it for. So that's a bargain. So if you want to find out how Britain ended up with all those German scientists and all their tech and secrets, and also if you want to find out what the big twist is at the back, at the end of this book, then that's probably the best way to go. £6 for the digital version. But like I say, you can still find the trade paperback secondhand, I think.
Definitely sounds like a plan.
Definitely, yeah. Anything else you wanted to mention about Ministry of Space before we move on, Andrew?
No, I think that's it. There's almost not enough pages to say much more. Like I said, go and get it for those two reveals.
Absolutely. And, I think, as we can say, the only thing is it's sort of strange that there isn't more of it.
Yeah, it's a real tragedy. So, votes to Chris Weston to develop his sidequel.
Yeah, hope so. Hope he can, and we shall see. Excellent stuff. So that was the Ministry of Space. I look forward to your next pick, Andrew. It'll probably be another year or so, but yeah, we will come back to a future one. Guest projects. I just wanted to mention that you are approaching, because you're a park runner, Andrew, and you are approaching your 250th park run, for which you get, what colour T-shirt do you get for that?
I get a green T-shirt. So looking forward to that one, yeah. Four more to go.
And you have also managed to do a little bit of park run tourism, because you get around a few sites. And I know that a couple of weeks ago you did the Enniskillen park run.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, couldn't get lost. Two laps round by the playing fields and the lake and the river. So that was a and it was nice. It wasn't wet. It started raining just as I left. So yeah, nice day in Enniskillen. I tripped over Mr. Trimble.
Paul Trimble of this parish,
yeah, well known of this. So we had a beer and some lunch in a pub in Enniskillen, and we're looking forward, hopefully, to getting back to Enniskillen Comic Fest, which is I think the first weekend of June next year, and I think that's going to be the 50th birthday for Battle.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Some of our first loves. So, yeah. But yes, yeah, so yeah, good fun seeing Paul again.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, absolutely wonderful chap, Paul. Runs the marvellous Enniskillen Comic Fest. And as you say, yeah, there's a big birthday to celebrate next year, because he is, of course, the world's biggest Battle fan.
Definitely.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, I am hoping to nip across for Enniskillen next year with luck. We'll see if that works out. But if we do, I might just do the Enniskillen park run on the Saturday before going into the Comic Fest. I'll pick up my own little bit of park run tourism as well.
Yeah, no, sounds like a plan. It was nice course, nice group there. And they had cake, as every sort of park run runner runs for. They mostly run for cake, and there was some cake at the end of Enniskillen park run, so all good.
Absolutely. A park run is marvellous, and great fun. And well, how does that T-shirt go? You know, heavy people are harder to kidnap. Eat cake.
Yeah.
That certainly works for me. Anyway, haven't been kidnapped yet. Great, Andrew. Thank you so much again for giving me your time and putting all the hard work in to talk about Ministry of Space. Fascinating miniseries. And Chris Weston's art is worth the price of admission alone.
Definitely, definitely.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, follow us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and the 2080 forums. Email mcbcpodcast@gmail.com if you have a book or a creator that you'd like to talk about on the book club. Find all of the links at megacitybookclub.com. And until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, it's goodbye from me and...
Goodbye from me, and I'll see you in a year's time.